No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I'm joined by my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, and together we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-429-5471. That's 888-429-5471, or Skype us at BBS Radio 2. Kathleen is not with me today because she is coordinating a veterans event on the USS Midway. I hope they're not letting her drive because I've seen the damage she can do in a car, and I just can't imagine how much damage she could do on an aircraft carrier. So today, without the help of my trusty co-host, I'm going to get a chance to talk finally. And since the Super Bowl is on, I'm not sure that anybody's out there listening. So let me know if you're out there. Let me know who you're rooting for. Let me know what the score is. Please call in, because a conversation is always so much more interesting than a monologue. We're going to start today's show, since I'm in control finally, with a couple of shout-outs. And the first one goes to Joe from San Jose, who just wrote the most lovely note and sent it into the station last week about how much he enjoyed the show. So if Joe, if you're out there listening to me instead of watching the Super Bowl, thank you so much, because it's always wonderful to get feedback from people and feel like you're having an impact. And we really appreciate it. And since we're on the issue of Joe from San Jose, let me tell you that one of the comments he made was that he really liked Dr. James Miller, who was our guest last week. And this was only one of many comments we got about Dr. Miller. Several people really found the things that Dr. Miller had to say interesting and important. So, Dr. Miller, if you're out there and you're crazy enough to be listening to me instead of watching the big game, feel free to call in as well. And please, I want our listeners to know that we'll have Dr. Miller back soon. We didn't have a guest on today because of the Super Bowl, but we'll have him back soon. And I want to remind everybody that Dr. Miller has a show that starts next month on BBS Radio Station 1 and is also on Sunday. So you can make it an event. You can listen to Dr. Miller and then listen to us. My next shout out goes to Kathleen, wherever you are on the aircraft carrier. Don't get too close to the edge. But, you know, Kathleen's out there doing a veterans event, because that's who Kathleen is. She's my very dear friend, and I've known her for so long, I can't believe it. More than 30 years now, almost 35 years. We had our first political jobs together. And please don't anybody ever repeat this if you run into her, because, you know, I refer to her as the little sister I never wanted. But Kathleen Gomez has maybe the biggest heart of anybody I've ever met. So good for you, Kathleen. I'm glad you're out there helping the veterans, and we'll be excited to have you back next week. Normally, on the first show of the month, we talk about statehood. So I'm going to talk about it briefly. But it's an important enough issue for us here in Washington that we're not going to spend a lot of time on it today, again, because of the Super Bowl. We've postponed it till next week, And next week's show will all be about equal rights for the people of the District of Columbia and statehood. But let me tell you a few things. We had a budget autonomy referendum passed by the people of the District of Columbia. 80% of the people in the district voted for budget autonomy. And this week, the GAO came out with a report saying that it violates our charter. So Congress has already started to interfere with the will of the people once again in Washington, D.C. And this is just terrible. I mean, for those of you that may not know it, the District of Columbia doesn't have control over its own budget. How crazy is this? We raise billions of dollars a year. We have a budget of $12 billion. We're so good at managing our money, they just announced that we have another budget deficit, another budget surplus at the end of the year of over $300 million. And this is our second budget surplus this year. Can't remember what the last one was, but I think it was somewhere in the neighborhood of $500 million. So we're really doing well in the district. We have a $1.2 billion rainy day fund set up, which, of course, saved us earlier in the year when the federal government shut down, because the District of Columbia is treated like a wholly owned subsidiary of the federal government. And when they close, we close. We have no money to pay our firemen, our teachers, our police officers. But luckily, because we had some money put away, our mayor stood up and said, we're not going to tolerate this. And we continue to keep everything open. And luckily, catastrophe was avoided when the federal government resolved its problems and reopened. So that's the news on statehood right now. We've got the members of Congress through the GAO right now. The Congressional Research Office messing with us again over a referendum that was clearly passed by the majority of voters in the District of Columbia. It's just a terrible situation. But that's it for statehood this week. We'll talk about it again next week in detail, and we'll have some interesting guests, I think, who will be on the show to comment about it. My next shout out goes to Pete Seeger. What a great guy this was, right? We lost him this week, and I think my personal opinion is that we lost a national hero, because Seeger is the kind of person I think that we all want to be. I mean, he changed the world, and he did it very simply and quietly through his music. He's written some really, really great songs. You know them. We all know them, and we're really going to miss him. The people of the Hudson Valley, where he lived for years in New York, and he helped clean up the river, they're really going to miss him. So if anybody out there is a Pete Seeger fan, you have my deepest condolences, and all his friends and family. We're sorry, and this was a great man, and we will all miss him, and our country has been diminished in his passing. Now my next shout-out is a shout-out that I never thought I'd give, but it goes to the Republicans in Congress. This week, the Republicans started to move on immigration reform. Now, we don't know what House Republicans will do, but the leaders of the House, Speaker Boehner and others, have stepped up to the plate, and they've started to move immigration reform forward. They're putting out kind of a framework in which we can decide, or the Congress can decide exactly what to do with immigration reform. It looks like it's going to include a pathway to citizenship, and it's going to stop the mass deportation of people without due process. And so Yay, Republicans. Finally, something good I can say about a Republican. It's been a while. So that's my next shout out. Now, as I said, usually we talk about DC statehood on the first day of the month, but first show of the month. But today we're not going to talk about, you know, we've already talked as much as we're going to talk about it. And we don't have a guest today also because it's the Super Bowl. And I guess I assume that everybody is out there watching the big game. And let me just say, since we're on the subject, let's talk a little bit about football. That's the first thing I want to talk about because I'm a big fan. I played football when I was a kid. I was absolutely the worst kid on the entire team, but that didn't matter. I loved it. I grew to love it. So the first thing I want to say is go Broncos. I mean, who's not rooting for the Broncos? If you're a Seattle fan and you're out there, call in and tell me why you're not rooting for the Broncos, because I want to see these guys. Who doesn't want to see Manning win after he was kicked to the curb by the Indianapolis Colts? And the Broncos picked him up. What an amazing story that he's the top quarterback in the NFL today. And my, I'm rooting for him because I'm all about the underdog, right? America loves an underdog. So go Broncos. If you know the score, call in and tell me. I don't know if there's been any score yet, but I hope they go all the way. Nothing personal about the Seahawks. My son, Nicholas, attends college in Washington. So I'm sure he's out there with all his buddies, all revved up, rooting for the Seahawks. But I'm a diehard Broncos fan, at least for today. And while we're on the subject of football, I want to tell you a little story. I fell in love with the Washington Redskins when I was 12 years old. My father took me into a bar, which he used to be able to do in those days. You know, it wasn't that unusual to have a kid in a bar. But I was in a bar with him downtown, a place called Fran O'Brien's, which was a sports, you know, we really didn't have sports bars in those days. But Franny was a box, the guy that owned it, I'm sorry, was a boxing promoter. Franny was a Redskin, former Redskin. And I got introduced briefly to Sonny Jurgensen. And my father said to me, this is one of the world's great athletes. I really had a hard time wrapping my head around it because Sonny wasn't in that good of shape. Sonny Jurgensen actually got in great shape after he left football. But when he played, he had kind of a pot belly, you know, just not the stereotypical athlete. So being curious, I watched a game following Sunday after that, I don't know what. And I saw him throw like a 50-yard pass on a shoestring to a guy named Charlie Taylor, who was just an amazing football player. And Taylor caught the ball and ran down the sidelines for a touchdown. Charlie Taylor ran like Gale Sayers. It was to watch Charlie Taylor run was like watching somebody dance. He was such an agile and amazing athlete. So I was hooked. Once I saw that, I was hooked. And I've been a Washington fan ever since. I no longer say that I'm a Redskin fan, because even though I'm a fan of the team, I'm not a fan of the name. Our owner, Dan Snyder, has dug his heels in after much pressure from the public and from even from professional quarters, asking him to change the name of the team. I mean, come on, America. Come on, Dan. Let's change the name of the Redskins. I love the team. But how racist can you be? I want you to know that I work with Native Americans. I've helped train them to run for public office through a great group called Indians List, and they're offended. And that really ought to be the benchmark, not whether you like the name or you think there's any problem with the name, if the if Native Americans are offended by the name, it should be changed. I mean, come on, Dan. Will we have a team called the New York Jew Boys? I don't think so. I think that Redskins is a derogatory term and that it needs to change. And I hope that we keep the pressure on him until it actually changes. I mean, the Redskins, unfortunately, have a long history of racist behavior. They were owned by a man named George Preston Marshall, who was an avowed racist. He never had an African-American player on the team. I think the Redskins were the last team to have an African-American player. They built RFK Stadium here in Washington with federal money, and the federal government told Marshall that he couldn't play in the stadium unless he had an African-American player. And that's when we hired our first African-American player, a guy named Bobby Mitchell, who became one of the greatest players ever to play for the Redskins and one of the great offensive players in the NFL. A lot of people don't know this about the Redskins, but they at the time were really the only team in the South other than the Dallas Cowboys. There was no Miami Dolphins. There was no Atlanta Falcons. There was no Carolina Panthers. There was no New Orleans Saints. There was no teams in the South except the Redskins. So they had a big following in the South. And I think, the logic there anyway is that Marshall, who himself, as I say, was a racist, didn't want to offend people in the South, so he never hired a black player. Come on, we've got a bad reputation on racism. We've got a racist name. It's time to change it. And, you know, the controversy has gone on for a long time. My sister was actually a friend with a woman named Susan Harjo, who has fought this legally. She's an attorney and has fought it many times on some very creative grounds. For example, at one time, they tried to get the logo banned because it was racist, and they figured if they could get the – and there's a federal law banning you from advertising with racist logos, and they figured if they could do that, Schneider would change the team name because he wouldn't want to lose the revenue, and that's probably true. So that I thought was an interesting idea, but unfortunately didn't fly in court. So we still have this name. You know, we have a precedence here in Washington too. The name of our basketball team used to be the Washington Bullets, but after so many young people in our city were killed in gun violence back in the 1980s, they changed the name, as you probably well know, from the Bullets to the Wizards. So come on, Dan, let's find a better name for the Washington Redskins. How about the Washington Shadow Senators? I kind of like that. But anyway, we need to do something about it, and we need to do something about it soon. And I understand that we have a proud football tradition here in Washington. The Redskins were founded, I believe, in 1932, late 1920s and the early 1930s. And they've had a distinguished record ever since, although not lately, unfortunately. I remember the glory days from the 80s when we had guys like the Smurfs and the Over the Hill Gang. So I'm a fan, but I'm not a fan of the name. Let's change that name. Come on out there. If there's anybody listening in Washington who's not watching the game, call in and tell us what you think. You think Redskins is racist? I do. What about you? The next thing I want to talk about is the State of the Union message. As you probably know, the president gave his State of the Union message earlier this week, in which, among other things, he said that he was going to use his power as president to push for legislation, that he was actually going to make laws, write laws, and he was going to one of those laws, for example, is national minimum wage. He was going to use his power as president. I'm sorry, not national minimum wage, federal minimum wage. He was going to increase the federal minimum wage as a way to encourage Congress to do the same. You know, when I got my first job, I think the minimum wage was $1.35 an hour. Oh my God, I can't believe how long ago that was. But today, the minimum wage is less, relatively speaking, to inflation and the cost of living than it was when I was a kid. When are we going to get hip to this? The gap in income is growing in America between rich and poor. And one of the reasons is that the minimum wage is so low. In the District of Columbia, if you have two families making them two workers in a family making a minimum wage, they can't afford to live in our city. Excuse me while I take a drink. They can't afford to live in Washington, D.C. So we need to change that, and we need to change it soon. He also talked about other initiatives that he was going to take, and I'd like to read a letter from the Washington Post that was written today by a guy named Gary Skut. It says, sidestepping the Constitution. Regarding the January 26th front page article, Rough Year Prompts a New Blueprint for Obama, a better headline might have been, after failures of 2013, West Wing seeks to sidestep the Constitution. It seems that everyone, and especially the president, has forgotten or chosen to forget that the U.S. government was set up under a constitutional system of checks and balances among three branches. With an agenda falling apart, Mr. Obama throws a tantrum, points the blame elsewhere, pulls out his executive order tablet, and tosses the Constitution in the trash can. Even more disturbing is that Americans and those they elect to Congress are guilty of allowing this to happen. Well, Mr. Skut, I appreciate your opinion, but you couldn't be more wrong. Okay? There is a balance of power, but they're called checks and balances. And this is one of the checks. This is why the president has the ability to do this, because when this country was founded and the Constitution was written and the framework was put together, there was an assumption that we all loved America and that we would work and cooperate to change things. But the Republicans on Capitol Hill, and sorry to do this to you guys because I just gave you some praise, have been stonewalling since Obama's been in. And in fact, we all know that the speaker said his job wasn't to make America a better place and to produce legislation. His job was to stop Obama. And so the president has taken action. God bless you, Mr. President. That's the thing to do. We need to get the country moving. And if we need to do it by executive order, then that's how we need to do it. And Mr. Skut, who I assume is a Republican, is wrong about this. They've stonewalled on immigration. We just gave them a shout out because they're moving on it. They've stonewalled on gun control. They've stonewalled on the minimum wage. They've stonewalled on so many things that they brought America to the brink in many cases. And I'm glad that I voted for a man who is standing up to this bullying. We don't need bullies in Congress. We need people that need to that want to cooperate. And you have a court system in this country, and you have an executive branch in this system as a check. as well as a balance. It's not a balancing act, Mr. Scud. It's a check and balance. And the President of the United States is exercising his right, ability, and legal recourse to check what the Republicans are doing on Capitol Hill and perhaps add some balance to it. And talking about bullying, you know, we've been talking about good things and bad things that are happening, and we're trying to point out every week that thing that's happened in politics locally or nationally that's been a good thing, and that thing that's been those things that have been a bad thing. A terrible thing has happened this week in Washington, D.C., and it's hit home in the Brown household. A great advocate for the children of the District of Columbia, my wife, who runs D.C. public school libraries, is being bullied by the leader of the chancellor of the District of Columbia school system, who doesn't agree with her stand on helping children through libraries. The chancellor and her people have assaulted my wife all week, all this week, because they're trying to push her into a corner because she wants to. She has aligned herself with library activists who want to make the libraries better, and they see her as a problem rather than an asset. I just want to say how proud I am of this woman who has stood up to the bullying. She hasn't allowed herself to be pushed down yet. We'll see what happens, and maybe I can report back in a few weeks or in a week or so that there's been a good outcome. I've got to tell you, there are very few people that stand up to these people. And I had to say this today because I'm so proud of my wife for being one of those people that stands up and is not going to let herself be pushed down, is not going to let herself be pushed out just because these people don't like her, because she cares about the kids and she cares about the libraries. You know, we have a functional illiteracy rate in the District of Columbia of 35%. A little over 30%. We have the most educated people on the face of the planet, yet here in the nation's capital, a third of adults cannot read the newspaper. So let me ask you, how crazy is it to be firing librarians and shutting down libraries? When my wife started, there were 92 librarians in the District of Columbia school system, qualified librarians. Now they're down to 65. That's one in three librarians has been let go. They think that kids don't need libraries. They're crazy. It really drives me nuts that these people that run our school system have this corporate mentality. This is what Dr. Miller talked about when he was on our show last week about how terrible this corporate mentality is. Well, this is a prime example of it. So if you live in Washington, D.C., and you're not watching the Super Bowl, call us and tell us what you think of this. We're going to take a little break now so that I can drink some coffee and keep my throat going. And here's a song from Whitney. And this goes out to my hero, Patty Brown. Back in a few minutes.
What you
Okay. That was for Patty Brown, who's just been a hero all week. And it really has come out in her. Always knew it was there. But I can tell you, I've seen it over and over again this week. And while we're on the subject, let's talk about education a little bit. You know, in the district, we have a real problem with our DC public schools. And it, I don't know, you know, Dr. Miller and I talked about this last week, and Kathleen, about this corporate mentality. But, you know, it drives me crazy that we go out there and we have a 2 or 3% increase in reading scores in the third grade, or math scores in the fourth grade. And it's all over the front page of the Washington Post. It's a big deal. But you know what? We have 40% of all the high school students in the District of Columbia do not complete high school in 4 years. And in some schools, the dropout rate is almost 50%. So how can we be out there bragging about education getting better when we're winning the little battles, but we're still losing the war? For those of you who may not know this about me, my parents died when I was a teenager, and I acted out in some terrible ways. And one of them was I dropped out of high school, never finished high school. To this day, I've never finished high school. Well, never completed high school. But I had a sister who was very, very tough and very, very strong. And her name was Patricia, too, now that I think about it. Maybe it's got something to do with the name. I'm glad I named my daughter Patricia. But anyway, she wouldn't let me fail, and she pushed me, and she figured out clever ways to get me to get a general equivalency diploma. So I got my GED, and that led me to a community college, which led me to a university, which led me to a graduate school. And in the end, I graduated with a master's degree at the top of my class. I've worked on several presidential campaigns. I've gotten to travel. I've gotten to do some interesting things, like be the United States Senator from the District of Columbia. And oh, how different my life would have been without a 10th grade education. So if you're out there bragging about a 2%, 3% increase in math scores, and you got 40% of your kids failing at the end, what good is that? I mean, you know, it's just crazy. It's crazy because the bottom line is that you have to have a high school education to even have laid the groundwork to succeed. So if there's anybody out there, I'm sure you're not out there because it's Super Bowl Sunday, but if you're listening and you have an opinion on this, call me, because I just don't understand how we can be lauding this and when we're failing so desperately in the District of Columbia. You know, another thing that we have is we have a 30% plus unemployment rate in the poorest neighborhoods of Washington, D.C. That's also where we have the highest dropout rate. Anacostia, which is the poorest neighborhood probably in the district, has this high unemployment rate, but they also at Anacostia High School have an almost 50% dropout rate. So what future do these people have? What future do kids have when they leave school before the age of 18 and there's no job for them? I mean, this is just a double whammy. How can we let these kids and their lives truncate their futures at such an early age? It's not only an abdication of our responsibility to them, it's just a travesty. It's something that we should be embarrassed about. So instead of talking about these minuscule increases here and there, let's talk about the whole picture. Let's see the whole a child, you know, which, by the way, is, again, I don't want to digress here, but this is something that librarians do. They see the whole child. They don't just see what is. They see what can be, and then they point kids in the direction that can make what can be happen. So let's stand up for the kids across the country, not only in Washington, D.C., but everywhere, every major city, and say education should be a priority. And it shouldn't be about this no child left behind. It should be about no child's future should be left behind. And when you stop going to school, when you don't get a basic education, when you can't go on, then your future's been stopped. And that we can't stand for. You know, I go down to Anacostia on occasion. I've done this a couple of times. And I talk to kids getting GEDs that are working on their GEDs. I try to inspire them a little. But I don't just inspire them to get a GED. I try to tell them that the GED is not the finish, but it's the start. That's what started my life. I went to community college from after I got my GED, and as I said, that led me all the way up to a master's degree. And you know, it not only changed the job opportunities that were available to me and let me do exciting things like working for President Carter. That, by the way, is where I met Kathleen. We both worked for President Carter. But it made a better person out of me. It made a more well-rounded person that looked to the future with hope rather than dwelled on the past. And so let's focus on the whole child and stop looking at this minutia that this corporate educational mentality has gotten us. And I think in the end, we'll have a better society if we don't. You know, it's way cheaper to educate somebody than it is to incarcerate them. I mean, even though I pay a ridiculous amount of money for my children to go to school, one of them attends DePaul University in Chicago, and the other one goes to Evergreen State University in Washington, and it costs a ridiculous amount of money. I think either one of them, I probably pay more in a year's tuition than I paid for my entire education from the day I started until the day I received my MA. Even though it costs that much money, it's way cheaper than it is to keep somebody in prison. Prison costs twice as much as a college education every year. And usually it lasts for more than 4 years. And usually it puts people into a cycle where they continue, the recidivism rate is high and it destroys families. And it's just crazy to try to deal with these problems on the back end when we should be dealing with them on the front end. And in that vein, let's move on to the next subject I want to talk about, and that's immigration. Like I said earlier in the show, I have a shout out to the Republicans who are finally moving immigration bills. And I hope that they will be able to get some momentum and that we'll be able to finally resolve the situation that we have here in the United States. And I'm tired of hearing the terrible propaganda that's out there about immigration. People that are coming to this country are coming to this country for the same reason that everybody came to this country, to get a better life, to make a better future for themselves and for their family. That's how the Irish came. That's why the Italians came. That's why the Poles came. That's why the Jews came after the Second World War. We've all come for the same reason. But, you know, we kind of act like we're all Native Americans. We're not Native Americans. where people from all over the world who have come into what we call the Great Melting Pot. And we understand that that's where our strength lies. It's our diversity that makes us strong. It's not putting up walls, building fences, keeping people out. Now, I'm not saying we don't need border security. Kathleen and I have done shows on border security. We've had the mayor of Douglas, Arizona, Dr. Gomez, on to talk about border security. Border security is important, and especially important down in the part of the country where Kathleen is. But people that are in this country should not be kicked out. They should not be denied services. We should find a way to give people a path to citizenship and a reasonable path to citizenship. You know, Kathleen, gee, I'm starting to miss Kathleen, huh? Kathleen worked at a hospital in Arizona, which was in dire straits because they took so many undocumented aliens who couldn't pay and they weren't reimbursed by the federal government. And I've heard people say, well, that's their own fault. They shouldn't have taken these people. Well, I'd like to hear from somebody, either Skype me or call in if you're out there, and tell me what you would do if a 12-year-old boy came to the emergency room and was hurt. Would you say, because you don't have a green card, go out in the parking lot and die? Of course not. We have to step up to the plate and deal with these problems. We can't just blow them off and say, well, that's my tax dollars. Because you know what? Somebody's tax dollars, somebody else's tax dollars got you here. I started paying taxes and have paid taxes every year since I was 14 years old. But for the first 14 years of my life, I lived off somebody else's taxes. Somebody else paid for my education. Somebody else paid for my public services. Somebody else paid for my safety. And so if we have to pay a little bit for others to be able to get on a path to citizenship, that's what we have to do. So I encourage you Republicans on Capitol Hill to step up to the plate, negotiate a reasonable solution to this problem. And I know that if you do, Democrats will go along with you. Another thing, since we're talking about about stepping up to the plate, is guns. Let's talk about guns. This all comes together right here for me. Education and guns. We've had 33 school shootings. Let me say that again so you understand. 33 school shootings since the massacre in Newtown just a little over a year ago. We need a reasonable gun policy. You know, I grew up around guns. I'm not afraid of guns, but oh my God, we need to do something. This idea that the left is trying to take people's guns away are ridiculous. All we want is for people to step up and come up with a reasonable gun policy so that you can have your Second Amendment rights, but we can have children that are safe, that can go to shopping malls, that can go to movie theaters. And I want to point out that we asked somebody from the Coalition to Stop Gun Violence to be on our show, and they accepted immediately. They accepted immediately. A man named Lad Everett, who's their communications director, came on and talked immediately to people about this issue. We have asked the NRA to come on the show. We've asked local people to come on the show. We've asked a gun advocate from Michigan to come on the show. None of them will come on the show. And the reason they won't come on the show is because they're cowards. They don't want to discuss the issue with anybody that doesn't agree with them. So this is what I got to say to you gun people out there. Stop hiding behind your damn guns and step up to the plate and become part of the solution instead of being in the way and becoming the part of the problem. I don't want to take your gun away. If you're a law-abiding citizen and you need a gun, you feel the need for a gun, you have the constitutional right to have one, damn it. And I'll stand up for your right to have one. But it's ridiculous not to have background checks. It's ridiculous not to have registration. These things put us all at risk, and we shouldn't be put at risk to pander to your paranoia. Now, Kathleen, who isn't with us today, of course, but has, you know, is my co-host, has spoken with to this issue many times. She's made the point, and I think she's absolutely right, that the gun policies of Arizona, where she lives, can't be the same as the gun policies of Washington or New York or you know, an urban area, that the need for guns in a rural area may be different. And I accept that. I think that we can come up with a national gun policy and that dovetails with state gun policies that are reasonable and keep people safe. Nobody's worried about law-abiding citizens having guns. And that's another problem with the propaganda. They say, the gun people say, if you don't have a gun, then only criminals have guns. You know what? I'm not worried about the criminals so much. I'm worried about the law-abiding citizens. You know, Adam Lanza wasn't a criminal until he killed all those babies. The guy that shot Gabby Giffords did have a minor criminal record, but nothing severe. The Virginia Tech shooter wasn't a criminal. These are people, you know, this is a game that these guys play. They're not criminals until they do something and they kill people, and then they are criminals, so they don't count anymore. Well, you got to get the gun out of their hands before they do the damage, and you can put them in that criminal category. And the way you do that is you do background checks, you do you make people register guns, you make people be responsible. Why is it that if you own a car in America, it has to be insured? Why is that? Because of the potential damage you can do with it. You have to indemnify the people around you. It's not about you. It's about everybody else. And the same thing can be said for guns. Guns, at least cars, for example, are designed for non-lethal purposes. Guns are not designed for non-lethal purposes, you know. I love the slogan, guns don't kill people, people kill people. That may be the dumbest thing that I've ever heard in my entire life, because a person with a stick is not going to be able to murder 20 children and before he turns the gun on himself. So let's wake up, America, and come up with a reasonable policy for gun control, or I don't even like calling it gun control, because that panders, that plays into the anti or the pro-gun people's agenda that we're trying to control them somehow. We're not trying to control them. I just want to keep kids safe. You want to have a gun, man? I know how to shoot a gun. I've shot a gun many times. I was a hunter when I was a young man. I'm not afraid of guns. I'm afraid of bad gun laws. So let's change that. And now that we've talked about everything that I want to talk about, and I'm almost out of energy and ability to talk. I guess I do miss Kathleen. She should be here. But anyway, she's out helping veterans, which is way more important. Now that we've talked about all these issues that I care about, education, immigration, statehood, the State of the Union speech, guns, I got the opportunity to shout out to a few people. I want to end the show. We have a few minutes left. I see nobody's called in. I assume that's because they're all watching the big game and having a good time and watching all those cool commercials. I love the commercial with the little dog and the Clydesdale, the puppy and the Clydesdale. It's really great. I haven't had a Budweiser in 30 years because I really don't drink much, but it's inspiring. I may go out and buy one tonight. But anyway, I want to talk about corruption in government, because that is just, you know, it's just gotten to the point where it's terrible. We've had all these people in the District of Columbia that were on the city council. I've talked about this before. One went to jail last year. Another one's about to go to jail this year. Actually, it's 2 years ago that the other one went. Another one's about to go this year. The chairman of our city council had to resign in disgrace over criminal activity. And so all Democrats, I want to point that out. This is not a partisan issue. This is, you know, there's as many corrupt Democrats. Some of the ones I loved, you know, I got to tell you that Jesse Jackson, who was the first senator from the District of Columbia, had my position. His son, Jesse Jackson Jr., was somebody I got to know a little bit while he was in Congress. He's from Chicago. It was a serious disappointment to me when they uncovered what he and his wife had done, and they sent him off to jail. This week, the only reason I point this out is because the last few weeks, it's been all about Republicans. But, you know, as I say, sometimes it's all about Democrats. And here we have a situation with Republicans that I think you're probably aware of, and that is that the governor of Virginia, Bob McDonald, it's all about governors, too. The former governor of Virginia, he was just defeated. Wasn't defeated. Actually, Virginia has this crazy law where you can only – it has a term limit where you can only be governor for one term. So he wasn't allowed to run for reelection. But he and his wife have now been charged with taking somewhere between $150,000 and $200,000 in gifts from and money and trips and clothing and all sorts of things from the owner of a company called Star Scientific. And in return, it's been alleged anyway, and we know that everybody deserves the presumption of innocence until they're proven guilty, but it's been alleged that after they took all these gifts and cash and trips and other stuff, that they pushed Star Scientific in Virginia. They made some kind of nutritional supplement. They pushed them and tried to help them get government contracts and other things. And this is just terrible. We have to end this, people. You know, there's a thing called the public trust. And when you're elected to public office, it's assumed that you will respond honorably and take your duty seriously and be uncorruptible. It's not your money. It's the taxpayers' money. And when you spend it on yourself, or you spend it on your friends, or you push to give it to people on the basis of what they've done for you, you're stealing it just as if you walked in and held up a liquor store or took it out of somebody's pocket. So we have to stop that. And now, after we've trashed the governor and his wife a little bit in Virginia, and by the way, they offered him a deal where they wouldn't have prosecuted his wife if he would step up to the plate and take a plea, and he refused to do it. So that just shows you what a great guy he is. But anyway, we also have the governor of my home state, Governor Christie. And this one really, really bothers me. And the reason it bothers me is because I think that Christie was a reasonable voice in the Republican Party, and I hate to see him go down like this, but it was reported this week that he knew about the closing of the George Washington Bridge. The head of the Port of Authority that The Port Authority that he appointed has released emails showing that he knew about it. So, you know what? Let's hold these guys accountable. Don't vote for them if they're not doing the right thing, because in the end, we're responsible. So I can see that we're out of time. I say adios to my friend Kathleen, who will be back next week and will join us. And we'll have an interesting discussion about statehood. I don't know who our guest is going to be yet. There are a couple potential guests, but we'll put it on our blog and our website when we get the information. And remember that you can get our show on Stitcher and Falk River Community Radio. And go out there and sign our petition at www.statehoodnow.org. Thank you, and we'll see you next week, America.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.